waiting for the high sign. Come on, let's go.
Your show will go live in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. This is a blog talk radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Islam and Christianity. We are here every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we're here every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. I forgot to mention this, guys. I am going to be in Kafiristan East next week, next Sunday. And I didn't know if any of y'all would want to host the show or step up and do the show. You don't have to make a decision right now, but if you do, you can just let me know. Shoot me an email or whatever. If not, then we could just, you know, everybody have a great Labor Day weekend. But we'll be back Tuesday evening, that's for sure. We'll show next Tuesday. Okay, so today we're going to be discussing a very sensitive issue. This is an issue that dominates American education, especially on college campuses today. It's the guilt that is, it's kind of like this, what do you call that, where you just keep beating somebody over the head with the same topic all the time. Is there like a cliched name for that? It's like the proverbial hammer that they America did this.
It's the guilt trip. The claim that all white people back in ages past, they all those white people, they enslaved the world. but the first slave here in the United States was black, and the first slave owner was what color? What race? He was black.
You're talking about the Jamestown.
The first known slave that's recorded in history in the United States was black man owned by a black man.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we're going to that's what we're going to get into, because when we look at the issue of slavery, everybody has blood on their hands, to include the people in Africa.
Yes,
for God's sake. So when we start saying that, you know, that does, and let's make sure that we understand what I'm not trying to do here. I am not trying to minimize the American guilt, the complicity that it had in the transatlantic slave trade or slavery itself. I'm not trying to do that. But what I am trying to do is I'm trying to draw a clear distinction and contrast the difference between the transatlantic and the American slavery experience with the Islamic slave experience. That's what I want to do today, because every time that we get this argument, well, you know, your ancestors enslaved my ancestors, and this is especially a big argument from our Black Hebrew Israelite friends. You know, I don't want to be friends with any Edomite. There we go. That's what they call us. They call an Edomite because of what his ancestors did to my ancestors. And I could just as equitably make the same argument. Well, I don't want to be, I want to have anything to do with this man because of what his ancestors did to my ancestors too. I mean, you can go back in perpetuity and claim victimhood and some type of grievance all you want. But the fact is that we all live in 2022 and we all are forced to live together. And if you want to say that your ancestors did this to my ancestor did this to your, you go on ahead. If you want to live in the past, that's fine. That's your business. Nobody's going to force you to, but it just makes you look small, makes you look like an idiot. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to make them look small. I'm going to make them look like idiots. Because when we think of the experience with slavery and this oft-made charge that it was Christian white men that enslaved African Muslims, that's simply not true. Not on the scale that we're taught. Now, were Muslims enslaved? Yes, it's undeniable. But not on the scale that we're led to believe, and they want, and their Dowagandists want you to believe. So that's what I'm going to focus on today. And I don't have a lot in a PowerPoint. And the reason why I don't have a lot is because number one, I had a terribly busy week. But number two, you can almost get, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, before the show came on, is that you can have death by PowerPoint too. People get really bored sitting there listening to this guy run his mouth. And I understand that. I get that. So this is, it's called a discussion group for a reason, because I want to have more of a discussion about these topics. Tobia, what does this say? Tobia Esau Singer. Oh, what is this? For real Johnson. Tobia Esau Sinner is Edomite, very pink. And yeah, that Tobia Singer guy, now isn't he on the lam for something right now? Isn't he like wanted for some type of sexual assault?
He's wanted for practicing Bidenism, being a Democrat, playing with little girls, being Joe Biden.
So what this is assault on a minor? Is this what this is? Or?
Yeah, a bunch of minors evidently.
Oh, really? Not just one. We're talking about...
Not just one. There's a bunch of them. Yeah, it was a big scandal. He got ran out of town.
Muhammad. Yeah. Okay. I've watched several of his videos before, and the guy is a very well-spoken, articulate guy, and he sounds very convincing. It's just when he has to actually defend whatever he's saying against people is where he gets tongue-tied and he gets all tied and he looks absolutely foolish. I would like to see, doesn't Michael Brown, Dr. Michael Brown, have like some type of standing challenge to this guy to have a debate or something like that? Have you guys heard anything about that? I might be wrong on that. I don't know. Okay. All right, so let's go ahead and look at my PowerPoint. Yes. Death by PowerPoint today is going to be minimized because I want people to share their thoughts about the information that I'm putting out here, I'll be bringing to the table. Okay, so slavery. Let's go ahead and begin with a really quick description of Islamic slavery with this map here. I want to put on the map here. Okay, so in 632, Muhammad dies and Islam bursts out of the Arabian Peninsula. You have the Pact of Omar and the sacking of Jerusalem, the sacking of Alexandria in Egypt. That's what, 640 something, where Alexandria Library is sacked. And then it spreads across the North African continent. And then by 632, look at it, it goes all the way up here into France, the Tours France, and they're finally turned back. And Spain is made an Islamic country for 700 years. The Moors did not, they ruled Spain until 1492 when they were finally expelled by Queen Isabella and, what was her husband, Ferdinand? What was her husband's, was it Ferdinand? Do I got that right?
Ferdinand and Isabella.
There we go, okay. And then if you go eastward, they went into the Hindu Kush, what is the stands, the Afghanistan, the Pakistan, the Tajikistan, the Sukhistan, all them stands here, and into the up to the Hindus River. Now, this is within 100 years. And then from there, you have these slave trade routes. Now, because of our American experience with slavery, we think often of the transatlantic slave trade and the African slave trade. But that the Islamic slave trade was not limited to Africa. It included Africans, this is true, but much of it, the majority of it, dealt with India. What the Islamic caliphates did to the people of India is absolutely horrific compared to what they did to the Africans. Now, I'm not trying to minimize or marginalize the suffering of human beings in any way, shape, or form. That's not my purpose here. But when we compare and contrast the two, you can see that the comparison is it's nowhere near what the other one had to go through. So it was the Hindus that really took the brunt of the Islamic slave trade. And that's the only thing I'm going to mention about that. We can do a separate show on it. But when we talk about 170 million people enslaved over the course of 1,300 years, the majority of them come from the subcontinent of India, the Indian subcontinent. So we should do a show on that just to see how people like Tamerlane and all these Islamic heroes or heroes of the Islamic faith, how they treated the people of India. It's just absolutely incredible, the amount of brutality that went into it. Okay, so let's do a little comparison of the Islamic slave trade and the transatlantic slave trade. Okay, the Islamic slave trade enslaved approximately 20 million African slaves that were sent eastward. They were sent to the harems in Africa, or not in Africa, in Arabia, and also into the Persian areas that would include the stands, the Pakistan, Afghanistan, all those places. We look at the transatlantic slave trade. You have about 11 million African slaves are sent west across the Atlantic Ocean. Now, this is what a lot of people don't realize because of the American. When I say the American, I'm talking about the United States of American experience, the British colonial experience, is that 95% of those 11 million went to Central and South Africa, Central and South America, and also to the West Indies out in the Caribbean. Now, the conditions out in the Caribbean islands were absolutely horrendous. When we say that you were worked to death, you were literally worked to death. You were expected to die. The average life expectancy of an African slave in the West Indies was about 3 years. The conditions on those plantations were absolutely brutal to the slaves. Now, any condition that you are in slavery is brutal, but some things are more brutal than others. And when we look at the life of those slaves out in the Caribbean islands, it's just absolutely horrific to think of the conditions that they had to endure. And then you compare that to the American slave experience, where it was horrific. It doesn't even come close. The nearest that you could probably get to that would be the Deep South during the height of the cotton, when cotton was king, where you had these plantations that are out in the middle of nowhere. There's no governing governing authority out there, and the slave owners did basically whatever they wanted to their slaves. Well, the brutality that occurred out there, the value of a slave was much higher than what it was in the Caribbean islands. Okay, so let's just see the numbers issue right here. It's not even close. It's like almost three times as many slaves went east as opposed to west. When these slaves were sent east, most of them were castrated. And when I talk about castration, I'm not just talking about the process of castration. I'm talking about their genitals were generally mutilated entirely, were removed. And so you had a huge number of them died because of this, whereas men were not castrated when they came to the colonies. You have about 80% of these slaves that were sent east died en route, not only from the castration, but also it was almost like putting on a death march when they would march these people across Africa and into Arabia, placed on ships and then sent into Arabia. It was terrible, 80%. Whereas in the transatlantic slave trade, it was about 7%. Some people put that estimate up upwards around 20%. But even if it was upwards of 20%, it's not even close to 80%. So even if it is at the highest end, which would be horrific in of itself, that'd be about 1 million of the slaves died en route. There was one guy. Do you guys remember who this guy was? He was from Congress. And they even made this. I went to a station on the Underground Railroad a couple years ago. And in this station, they were talking about so many slaves were died along the way and their bodies were thrown in the ocean that it changed the feeding routes of the sharks. Their migratory, how sharks migrate and they have breeding, and it changed.
Yeah, have you
heard this before?
Yeah, that turned out to be totally untrue. But
it is. But the point is, right. You're absolutely right, because you don't have any data of what the migratory routes were before. You don't have any You don't have any evidence. Let's just put that before. But now you're saying that they were changed because of they were dumping so many dead African slaves off these ships into the ocean that the sharks were feeding off them, and they would follow these ships around the ocean. I don't know. I mean, if you're going to come up with instances of brutality and the impact that it has, you don't have to invent stuff. You just can use facts here when it comes to the transatlantic slave trade, and you don't have to sensationalize it at all. It was brutal. That's the bottom line. But this is what they do. They want to sensationalize everything. Okay, so let's say it isn't 20%, but it was most accurate ones that I've seen in peer-reviewed stuff is around, they put it around 7. Sometimes some people put up around 12%, but let's just say 10. I'll even go in and change that if it makes anybody angry. Okay, those ones that were sent east into Arabia and Islamic countries, 2 out of every 3 were women. And of course, the reason for that is that these women were sent to the harems of these Arabs, these sheikhs and mullahs, what have you, to serve as sex slaves. Whereas 2 out of every 3...
Eric, so you're saying they weren't extra wives, they were slaves.
Slaves, right. They weren't... To be a wife. No, they were sent to be a slave, and the purpose, the thing that they had to do for slavery was have sex. That was their job. And I touched on this, the fact that millions more were enslaved in India. When they were 2 out of 3 going west were men, and the reason why is because they were worked, put in these on these plantations and literally worked to death, especially in the sugarcane plantations down in the West Indies. The reason why they were growing so much sugarcane is so they could make rum. That was part of the slave triangle, where they would send sugarcane from the West Indies to the New England colonies, where they would distill it into rum. Then they would send the rum to Africa, trade that for slaves. And then the middle passage of that slave triangle was where they would transport slaves to the Caribbean, trade it for sugarcane, send that, and it was just a triangle. They called it triangle trade. It was a slave triangle. So 2 out of 3 were men. Theirs lasted for 1,300 years. This Islamic slave trade from Africa into Islamic lands lasted for 1,300 years. It began right after Muhammad died, and it just recently, if I'm not mistaken, was finally banned. What's that country that just banned it, like in the 70s or so? Is it Mauritania? Am I right on that? Does anybody know?
Mauritania is correct.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Mauritania. And that's not the 70s. I believe it's the 90s.
Is it really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's more recent than.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then this transatlantic slave trade lasted for about 250 years. And let's be clear on who ended the transatlantic slave trade. It wasn't a group of Muslims that ended it. It wasn't a group of Buddhists. It wasn't a group of Hindus. It was Christians. The movement to end slavery in the United States was a Christian movement. It wasn't, the abolitionist movement was not a secular movement at all. It was a purely Christian movement trying to reform our country. So when we think of the transatlantic slave trade and compare that to Islamic trade, there is no comparison. Now, how do you justify? And let me ask you this. How did people justify?
Eric, here we go. It stopped. According to the Mauritanian government, it stopped they're saying 2013.
Oh, when?
2013. March of 2013, the president established an agency to combat slavery. Doesn't mean it's totally over with. It means they've established something to combat slavery in March of 2013. In 2015, the government expanded the definition of slavery to include child labor. So under their definition, slavery isn't over, but they started to combat it in March of 2013.
I didn't think it was that recent. That's crazy. I mean, that's insane. I mean, this is, we would have learned our lessons.
In the 1960s, Saudi Arabia said that they would abolish it, and they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't.
It still exists, but it's like Mecca. You're banned from going in that area now.
Okay, now let's compare though. Okay, so I'm talking about like the African slave trade, and I think I know what you're talking about as far as Saudi Arabia is concerned, because Saudi Arabia still practices a form of slavery where they allow these girls from, namely Asian countries, Southeast Asian countries, to come into their country to work as domestic help.
Well, I was on with Osama last night, and Lynn was on the show, and she was talking about how Indonesian girls will go to take jobs in Saudi Arabia, and they'll all come back having been raped. So, yes.
Yeah, and they'll take their passports, and then they won't let them go, and you can't get out unless you have your passport. And these women are forced into these hellish-like conditions of being abused by the man of the house and not making any money, and then naturally being beaten by the wife of the house because her husband is raping her, and she's getting blamed by the – you know, it's some of the stories that you read out of that are just – you know, are you kidding me? This is 2022, for God's sake. And there was that one case, was it Sharon or Paul? You guys brought up them in the pre-show, where they were here in the United States doing that. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I did. In some states, they actually, you know, gave them a trial, freed the slaves, and some of them sit in prison. I know at least one in prison in California, in my state. But there's other states where during the Obama years, they were just deported.
Yes, that's correct. In general, they get deported. They run or they get deported before anything happens.
Yeah.
Well, didn't they keep this girl like chained in the basement or something? The one in Colorado, it just kind of sticks to my mind, where, because I was reading about it and I'm like, how do you let something like this happen here in this country today?
Nobody knew that she existed is what it came down to locally. They didn't know that she, they thought of her, they'd never seen her. I mean, that was the thing that locals said, if I remember that story correctly. They didn't know there was another person.
Wow. Okay, let's jump back over here. Okay, so let's look at a couple more facts about this. Islamic law and the Sharia allow for this. They provide the enslavement of non-Muslims in what they call Dar al-Harb, which is the house of war, lands that are not ruled by Muslims is Dar al-Harb, and us non-Muslims living in Dar al-Harb can be enslaved and sold as slaves. The residents of an Islamic state who fail to pay the jizya. So if you live in Islamic state and you do not pay the capitation tax, the jizya, freely and willingly out of hand and feel yourself subdued, then you too can, you lose all the protection rights that you have from the state, and you can be enslaved and or killed. Warfare, the booty taken during warfare, can include non-Muslims who were captured in the battlefield. They include men and their wives and their children and their children's children. And then if you look at entire populations of conquered towns are, can be taken into slavery to include women. And a lot, there's a lot of hadith that I'm going to cover here today that, that talk about these women that are taken into, that are enslaved because of some of the admonitions of the Islamic law. Okay. So this one, I guess I didn't do this one right. That's why I said I kind of hurried on this week's slideshow. When you look at Islamic law does not allow one Muslim to enslave another Muslim. And this kind of debunks this idea that the majority of the slaves that came to the Americas were Muslim. I've heard this argument so often, especially from the people from the Nation of Islam. I remember I had that guy on here from the Nation of Islam a couple months ago. I can't remember the gentleman's name. And he was talking about how Islam is the natural religion of the African man, when that's simply not true. If you look at the history of the continent Africa, they generally venerated their ancestors that had nothing to do with Islam. Now, Islam does go clear back to the 7th century. And the biggest slave owner in Africa, the richest man to ever live prior to Jeff Bezos, and is Elon Musk the richest guy on the planet today? Am I right on that or am I wrong? Anybody? Anybody?
I don't think he is. I think he's still beat by Bill Gates by pretty far.
Who's the Amazon guy? Jeff Bezos?
Bezos or whatever you want.
Isn't he richer than Gates now?
I have no idea, but I think the Gates guy should be under lock and key.
Duza says it's Elon. I don't know. I'm willing. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that the
he didn't lose his money on Twitter, so maybe he could still be rich. Yeah.
Yeah. The richest guy to ever live prior to that was engaged in the African slave trade. His name was Manasseh Musa. He was the king of Mali during the 15th century. And he was made much of his money. He made his money from gold mining and selling and trading in natural resources. It's true. But a lot of his money came from selling and dealing in slavery. And he spread Islam. He was a big proponent of spreading Islam. Let's see. Elon Musk, CEO, Tesla is the richest person in the world with a net worth of, okay, so here we go. All right. I thought I'd heard that someplace. And then he says Bezos is second. And I think Bill Gates is, I don't know. I guess he's chump change now. It doesn't matter. But what I was saying about this Manasseh Musa character, he was a very devout Muslim, and he spread Islam all throughout the Mali Kingdom, up and down the west coast of Africa. He built all kinds of madrasas, mosques. When he finally made Hajj to Mecca, it became legendary, where he was giving away, you know, he had camels carrying huge sacks of gold bars with him and giving it away. Along the way, it was incredible. Okay, then we have Muhammad. Muhammad himself enslaved people. Muhammad raped slave girls. Muhammad sold slaves. So the bottom line is, if Muhammad did it, it is Sunnah, anything Muhammad did is Sunni. So when we start talking about, did he ban slavery or not? Hold on just a second. I got somebody here. My grandson's sticking his head in. Sorry about that. Okay, so let's go on to the next one. What does the Quran have to say about slavery? Well, the Quran says in 33:50, it says, O Prophet, we have made lawful to thee, to thy wives, to whom thou hast paid their dowries, and those slaves whom thy right hand possesses. So the Quran, Allah, God, is making slaves lawful to have sex with. Now, if there is not any clearer passage in the Quran that will show you the morality of Allah, this God of the Quran, to say that the God of the Bible and the God of the Quran are one of the same is absolute foolhardiness.
We had Lloyd de Jonge, and he was saying that he was talking about the importance of Sharia and how, I just watched one of his shows on abrogation. And when a verse in the Quran is put in Sharia, it's not abrogated. It can abrogate other things. So this is still allowable. That's scary stuff.
You're right. Yeah. When we think of has slavery been banned? I was on a show a number of years ago on Blog Talk Radio with a guy by the name of Hard Truth Smith was his name. And he had a great show. I used to go on there all the time and we would get into it. And he had an imam on from Detroit. And the imam was a very knowledgeable man. I mean, he was very well spoken and he knew the Sharia inside and out. And the Hard Truth Smith asked him something on the lines of, okay, so where did Muhammad ban slavery? And the imam was very straightforward. He goes, you didn't ban slavery. Slavery is perfectly permissible. He said slavery is perfectly permissible in Islam because Muhammad owned slaves, sold slaves, bought slaves, enslaved people, and had sex with slaves. And the response by the host was absolutely priceless. Because he said, I know all that, but, and the imam was like, there's no buts in it. These things are still permissible under Islam because if Muhammad did it, then you can do it. It's there's no abrogation of the Sunnah. There's no abrogation of, and you said it just right with what Lloyd said, you do not abrogate the Sharia. And the Sharia says, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, that you can take slaves in jihad. So if you can take slaves in jihad, then that means that slavery is permissible. Okay, let's go on and see what else Allah has to say about slavery. Allah says in chapter 23, verses 5 and 6, who abstain from sex except those who join to them in marriage bond or the captives whom their right hand possesses. Well, who pray tell are those captives? Those are slaves. You have taken somebody's slave in battle, so therefore they are lawful to you to have sex with or do whatever you want to. You can sell them if you want to. Chapter 4, verse 24. Also forbidden are women already married. You can't touch those if they're already married, except those women who are captives and slaves whom your right hand possesses. So if you go out on a battlefield, and you capture a woman, even if her husband is still alive, she can be your slave and you can have sex with her, even though her husband's still alive. And the reason for that is that their marriage is annulled just as soon as you capture them. Think about that. Think about how horrific that is, how brutal that is to the human condition. What makes that person, the status in life, where they're relegated to be. Even though you're married, because you have been captured on the battlefield, You're now my slave. I can do whatever the heck I want to you. And there's nothing, you have no standing anywhere to say that I don't have a right to do that. Even if you're married, it's not considered adultery. Why? Because I captured you on the battlefield. And my God allows me to do that. So you shut your mouth.
You are now subhuman.
Yeah, you're taking away somebody's humanity by doing that. That's a great point. I mean, it's one of the first things that if you're going to try to conquer somebody, or if you're going to try to brutalize somebody, if you're going to try to kill people, like, I don't know, the Jews, you dehumanize them. You take away their humanity. This is what startled me this week when Joe Biden, President Biden, started saying, you know, I can have disagreements with my conservative colleagues, but them MAGA people, they are, what did he say? I can't even remember what classification he put us into, but the classification basically
racist
was semi-Nazis, semi-fascist, semi-fascist.
Well, whatever it was, if you can categorize somebody like that, well, then you can start investigating them. You can start terrorizing them yourself. You can start harassing them. That, well, I agree. And here it's coming right out of the horse's our mouth. We're hearing it straight from him. So this is where it begins. And this is where it says, you know, when Allah starts dehumanizing people, saying that you can rape them, you can capture them and enslave them, and there's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter if you're married or not. And it's right in their own book. I wonder how somebody would defend. I don't know how some people defend. How do they defend this stuff? I mean, have you heard anybody try to defend slavery in Islam? Have you heard anybody try to do this before?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
What's their defense? What's the defense for this?
That it's in the Quran. That's their defense.
So the God of the universe, the God that created everything, that was spoken word, says it's okay for you to enslave other people.
That's their whole defense. It's in the Quran.
They also say things like slavery was merciful in Islam. Slaves had rights. But here's the thing.
Sorry. No matter how many times I hear that, I still think that's funny.
Yeah. Slaves had rights. Okay, now here's the funny thing. So that means that a Muslim woman who is a free woman had less rights than a slave. Because they will say that, well, yes, the slave woman could say no. But the wife can't say no. So they have all these goofy things, but yeah, it was merciful. Slaves had rights. What else? Islam frees the slaves because you can free a slave to make repentance for your sins. So no, that just means you're going to buy a lot more slaves if you're a sinner, because you're going to be freeing a lot of slaves, but you still got to replace that slave. But anyway, actually, there's a hadith where Aisha freed 100 slaves because of something that she did that was a big sin. Okay? She had 100 slaves. Okay? Now, do you really think that she went on doing what those 100 slaves were doing? No, of course not. She just got 100 more slaves, so it was no big deal. Yeah.
Why would she free 100 slaves? Why would she do that?
She said that she made some kind of really bad sin at one point in her life. So she was probably having sex with somebody else. You know what I mean? Something like that.
Yeah, that was what was thought. It's actually thought. So, yeah, it's not a surprise.
Yeah. Hmm. Slaves probably were considered, lucky, because the men were killed and the boys with hair were killed. And then the rest were enslaved. And the children, they probably were raped too, boys and girls.
That's the Banu Qurayza tribe. Yeah, the criteria that's exactly right. The Banu Qurayza, the criteria used to determine whether or not somebody had their head cut off or not was whether they had entered puberty or not. The boys, anyway.
And they did that in Europe. You know, when they first started invading Europe, they would go on and invade these small villages and towns and basically do that. They'd kill the men, boys with hair, and enslave the women and children. Yeah. I guess they take a man, a full-grown man, if they need one, and then, you know, cut off his, you know, what's.
Right. Yeah, castrate him. They had they went as far from what I've heard is that they went as far north as England.
Yeah,
they had raiding ships going to England and for slave raiding parties.
There's
which
a
is
book
pretty scary.
It's called White Gold, and that goes into that slavery that you know, before the Crusades. I mean, that went on for about 400 years. The violent jihad, and they right now they try to tell us that it was all peaceful. No.
I had trying to get my. It looks like my my Kindle is dead right now, but I do have a book. I can't remember what it is, but it talks about these slave raiding parties. I can't, but they would go that far north. Somebody said that they went as far as they even went up to Denmark or someplace like that. I
don't remember the country, but yeah, they did go very far north.
Yeah, and they're looking. Here's what they're looking for: they're looking for blonde-headed women. The blonde-headed women were the ones that they wanted, because that was, you know,
they
didn't
got more
have
money
that.
For them,
right? In the slave markets, yeah, they would steal you and then sell you in a slave market because you have blonde hair. It kind of sounds familiar today what they're doing in Sweden, but they're just raping the women there. That's why they ran out of hair dye a couple years ago. All right, let's jump back over here to the slideshows. So let's take a look at some of the hadith. Or no, we're still in the Quran. I'm sorry. Let's see. Chapter 8, verse 69. But now enjoy what ye took in war, lawful and good. So you're enjoying what? You're enjoying the slaves that you took in warfare. Here in 24:32, and marry those among you who are single and those who are fit among your male slaves and your female slaves. 178, O ye who believe, retaliation is prescribed for you in the matter of murder, the freeman for the freeman and the slave for the slave and the female for the female. So when you look at all the chronic mentions of slavery, it treats it as if it's a perfectly acceptable practice. And it's actually expected. If you wage jihad, you can go out and take as many sex slaves as you want. It doesn't appear to put any limit on that. And you can use them for whatever sick purpose that you could ever dream of. And that's from the God of the universe, don't you know? And people believe this. It's nuts. Okay, then we look in, if you look in the hadith literature, it says, it talks about that a person was charged with fornication with a slave girl. So you're charged with fornicating, not a Muslim. This is one slave charged with fornicating with another slave, is what this one is about. And he was ordered to go out and kill this guy by Muhammad. Who was this? Ali Anas reported that. Let's see, said Ali. It says Ali came to him and found that the guy, his whole unit had been cut off. So when we start talking about, when I was talking about how they would castrate, and in a lot of cases more than that, they would cut everything off. This is an example of that. This hadith right here is graded Sahih by Dar Yus Salam. Narrated from Anas that the Messenger of Allah had a female slave whom he had intercourse. So this is Sunnah. So if Muhammad has a female slave and has intercourse with her, that's sunnah. It's perfectly permissible. This is from Al-Nasi, and it's explained in the Tafsir, in the Quran, also here by, I think this is from Al-Jalalain, in chapter 66, verse 1. It says, O Prophet, why do you prohibit that which God has made lawful to you in terms of your Coptic handmaiden Miriam? When he lay with her in the house of Hasfa, who had been away, but whom upon returning and finding out became upset by the fact that he had taken the place in her own house and on her own bed, by saying, she is unlawful for me, seeking by making her unlawful for you to please your wives. And God is forgiving and merciful, having forgiven you this prohibition. Let's look and see. Listen to what's happening here. Hafsa is away, and Muhammad, since she and Aisha are away doing whatever, I can't remember what they were doing, but they weren't around. And so Muhammad grabs his slave, Mary the Copt, and goes to Hafsa's house and starts having sex with her. Hafsa comes home and catches them. And Muhammad does the right thing. He says, I'm sorry. I'm committing adultery here. I should not be doing this. I'm raping this poor young slave girl of mine in your own bed. What a piece of crap am I for doing this? I swear to you that I will never do this again. He does the right thing. He apologizes and swears that he'll never do it again. But Allah says, no, Muhammad. Muhammad, what are you thinking about? Go back and let's take a look and see what Allah tells Muhammad. He says, Muhammad, in her house by saying she's unlawful. And God is forgiving. So God is saying, look, why are you saying that she's unlawful, seeking to make your wives happy? God is forgiving and merciful, forgiven you this, look at this, this prohibition. Do you guys see that? Did you catch that? He's forgiven the prohibition of having sex with his slave girls. Even if he swears that he's never going to do it again, he's forgiven this by Allah, saying that it's perfectly okay to do this. You can, those that your right hand possesses, those are yours. Do it with them what you please. That's a heck of a God.
Some kind of psychological disorder when somebody just makes up a story just to ensure that he's not full of sin.
You converts, you are you. Huh? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, what'd you say? It seems like there's a psychological disorder that.
I'm sorry. What was that? I'm sorry. We didn't hear you. Broke up.
It seems like
we can hear just fine, Rad. What are you talking about?
does Brad do that? Okay.
I don't know. Rad,
psychological disorder when somebody makes up stuff to ensure that nobody thinks that he did something bad or he sinned or, you know, that type of thing.
I'm not sure what that's called, but yeah, I think you're right. When you don't accept any responsibility, it sounds like being a Democrat, it sounds like not accepting any responsibility for what you've done and then blaming everybody else, telling them that they're worse than you for doing it.
Yeah, you kind of got a point there.
First of all, you silly campers. You silly kafirs, you're reading that verse all wrong. The verse is talking about honey. Honey. You see, Muhammad
I was reading about this.
Yeah, he swore off honey. And his wives were trying to force him to eat honey. So that's why he was going to divorce all his wives, because he didn't want honey. And he was trying to swear it off. But Allah said, no, you can eat honey. I am not making it up.
It's supposed to be a euphemism for having sex is what it was for. It's just another way of saying he was eating honey at so-and-so's house. When it's just a polite way of saying he was having sex with this woman at her house.
No, Eric. They believe in real physical honey. No euphemisms. People who follow like Kenny Islam and other forms of Westernized Islam, they actually believe that. They have some kind of Westernized scholar who actually points that out. Actually, Paul, I think it's that one guy. I didn't listen to him, so I wasn't sure, but I read the thing that you shared on the one guy that was talking about modernizing Islam, and he got some stuff from that lesbian Muslim in Canada. I think she's the one who started that. Okay.
She's nuts.
What's her name? I can't think of her name. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's what they were pushing for a while, but nobody believes it because it's total complete nonsense. But I just thought I'd let you know in case you encounter
it. On that line, Eric, I'm gonna put something up to share. Let me just move my screen.
Okay, I got a message from Karen. It says that we're frozen. Is this true? Are we still frozen, Karen? Says you aren't live streaming.
We're not frozen now.
I didn't see that. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So Jala Lane comes in and he provides a cast fear on this. So what he's doing is he's explaining that, yeah, Muhammad, even though you were caught having sex with this cop, Mary the cop, in Hafsa's bed, you swore that you wouldn't do it again. Here, I, Allah, in the last message that I have for all of humanity, feel it is important enough to tell all of humanity that you don't have to make these promises. And the reason why is I, Allah, have given you these women to do with what you please. I've given you another human being to do with what you please. I've given you a human being created in the image of God who has a soul, an eternal soul, for you to abuse them any way that you see fit. Why? Because you're Allah's apostle, don't you see? Who believes these things? Who would believe something as incredible as that? And then use that as a justification, saying, well, it's a sunnah. It's Muhammad did it. And Muhammad received it. And even Allah got involved in all of this. And since Allah got involved in all of this, it has to be okay to do. So when you see something like that, and we sit back and we look at, okay, so how did slave 29 million people from the continent of Africa are sold into slavery? Millions and millions more from the Indian subcontinent are enslaved, and these things are done to them. And people are going, well, why is that? All you have to do is just do a cursory look at Islamic literature. You just look at the Quran, you look at the Hadith, and you don't need to look any further because it's right there in front of your face. Okay. Were you going to show something, Paul? What do you got here?
Ready for just a second. Okay. So this comes from chapter 5 of my last book. It says, in Pakistan, on May 31st, 2010, a talk show host, Mubashir Luqman, interviewed Islamic clerics, Maulana Naimi, Muhammad Siddiqui, and Allama Zahir on Pakistan television channel Express News. Now, I wanted to go find this because, I watched this, I don't know how many times, before I actually got the quotes down and stuff, but that's only available now if you have a flash function on your computer. And most computers who are up to date, flash doesn't work anymore. So I actually went and tried to download it while I was going to get it, but that's the reason why it's not there. It is this, you can find this exact stuff. Besides going to my book, you can go to memory.org and you can type in Pakistan and slavery, and you'll find stuff. But you look at these questions. This is from the host. He says, I have a question. Does Islam allow slave trading? He's talking about today. And this was in 2010. And his answer, Allama Zahir says, Islam allows to trade slaves where there are established markets for this purpose. Taking new men as slaves is neither allowed in Islam, nor does Islam encourage it. Now, wait, that's not the exact truth. So listen, we got Luqman comes back and he asks, the offspring from a slave is a slave, isn't it? Zahir says, no, there's a number of conditions under which an offspring, it goes on and on. But what happens is they start laughing because they say, this is where it gets bothersome. You know, if we're at war, we could go and take all the Jews as slaves. Once we go and take, we'll take over Israel and we'll make them our slaves. And they start laughing. Now you can find this on these quotes on a memory Pakistan TV debate on concubines and slavery. And I say this is sad. It's sick. That discussion there. It's also in my book. That stuff should make you concerned. And you know, like
they're joking about this, you said?
Yes. And that's what gets scary. I have one more thing here. I just gotta find it. Yeah. Where did I put it? Okay. So I know everybody knows ISIS was doing this stuff. Let me put this one back up. Still in the share file there. All right. I mean, it's not that long ago, ISIS published a pamphlet on how to treat female slaves. All right? That's 2014. And no scholar denied that anything was... Nobody talked about this, you know, that being wrong. They might have said they don't like ISIS because, you know, for pictures and stuff, they don't want to look bad. but they didn't deny anything that was being said by this. I mean, it's something to say. And this is covered. Now look at Newsweek covered this. If you have a special subscription to memory.org, you can see that maggot. You can see that. So it's not gone away. Slavery has not gone away in Islam. It's still a constant discussion today. Is slavery allowed in Islam? Yes. Do we want it allowed? No. And there's a couple years ago, we had a woman who, and I just, yeah, okay. There was another woman who was running for, I think it was, she was in Jordan or Lebanon. She was running to be, might have been Kuwait. I think it was Kuwait. She was running for office there. She wanted to have sex slavery legalized so the men would be better behaved, is my best way to put it. I don't know if you remember that video. She's out there trying to, she goes up and she talks to scholars and she gets their opinion. Yeah, we just have to be at war to get new slaves. And then you can have, then, you know, as long as we're at war, you can get the new sex slaves and then you can have them. And, you know, the whole process and about how much better that'll be for the men. What about the women?
Well, women can only marry one man. The man can marry up to four wives and have as many sex slaves as he wants. It's,
yeah, it's just horrible.
It's because Allah is forgiving and merciful. Because Allah is forgiving and merciful is why that is.
Well, he's only forgiving and merciful, not to the woman, though. It doesn't sound like he's forgiving and merciful to women.
Okay, to the one that matters, in other words. I mean, think of how twisted it. I mean, just think how twisted that is. I mean, that thought process there. I mean, this is 2022, and these things are still believed. These things are still practiced. And we're just supposed to close your eyes, pretend it's not there. You guys, you Kaffirs, you don't know what you're looking at. You don't know what the is being written right before in front of your face. It doesn't really mean that. Wink, wink. It's sick. Okay, let's get back to where some of these hadiths. I'm sorry. Okay, so that was a Tasfir. I'm sorry. Whew. Big yawn. That was a Tasfir. Let's look at Bukhari. Narrated Bukhari, the Prophet sent Ali to Khalid to bring the...
Can I just interject here really quickly here? Because I wanted to mention something. You mentioned the thing about the honey or having the sex with the wife and Allah forgiving it. You know, I have heard Muslims say that the reason why Muhammad was allowed all the sexual immorality is to prevent him from committing sexual immorality. Think about this, okay? Think about this reason, this logic. Because we all know, look at all the, I've heard them say this. Look at all the scandals you have where your pastors are having sex with women outside of marriage. See, Allah wanted to protect Muhammad, okay, from these scandals. So therefore, he gave him permission to have sex with all these women, so therefore he could not be accused of committing adultery. Seriously, that is their logic and their reasoning. Yeah.
Okay, so if they do this enough times, it'll be okay. So if you do this enough times, it's okay. So if you do this enough times, it's no longer scandalous. So therefore, when it's brought up, it cannot be a scandal. Is that about right? Am I right on that? You can't make it a scandal.
Exactly,
if it
because
Allah
gave
him
permission.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Allah gave. Well, not only that, but Allah gave him permission. Yeah. Allah gave him permission, so therefore it's not. It protects him. How Allah always protects the prophet.
All right. So let's look at what Ali did here. Go ahead, Paul. You have something up here in the screen.
Take a look at this one, just to say it's still happening today. Mm-hmm. This is from 2020. Okay. A translation from memory.org. And this woman is saying more than 20% of the people in Mauritania suffer from slavery. So still happening today in Mauritania. Remember, they only
20%. 20%? Holy crap. Yeah. When is this dated? What's the date on this?
2020.
Holy moly.
People don't realize in Islam, they can't outlaw the Sharia. Even if they make a law, their constitution in these Islamic countries says Sharia is the supreme law of the land. It doesn't matter if the people make a law that says slavery is outlawed. Even those laws cannot overrule Sharia. It has to be explicitly understood that, you know, they might do something for show, but if they're not going to outlaw Sharia, Islam, because they said in the constitution, Sharia is the supreme law of the land. So that's what it comes down to.
Let's read a couple of passages from the Sharia, shall we? Because I could sit here and cite, you know, I had, let me bring this up. Here we are. Let me pull this over and I'll show you what I'm talking about. Here we go. This is, I was just going to put, you know, I had all of these tabs and I was just going to cut and paste them to a slideshow. And I thought, you know what? You'll lose your audience. So I'm having mercy on you guys today because I don't want to lose the audience here. So let me just show you what is the religion of peace has to say about. Oops, I got to add this. Hold on, add to the stream. There we go. This is over religion of the peace, and this is what it lists all of the different hadith that exist describing slaves, Muhammad practicing slavery. You have Bukhari. It says that slaves are property. Bukhari says a woman's taken as slaves in battle. And the woman raped by with Muhammad's approval. Bukhari taken in captive again, raped with Muhammad's approval. Bukhari, a woman is rebuked by Muhammad for freeing a slave girl. Bukhari, Muhammad sends a slave for money. Bukhari, some contemporary Muslims in the West are reluctant to believe Muhammad owned slaves. This is one of the many places of hadith where reference is made to him being a human being owned by Muhammad. Bukhari discourages emancipation. Sahih Muslim. Excellent Arab women from Banu. This is another Jewish tribe, I think it was. And they wanted to rape them. They were afraid that they were going to get pregnant. And Muhammad said, that it doesn't matter. Every soul will be born. Muslim trades two African. Muhammad trades slaves. Muhammad had a slave acting as his chauffeur. Muhammad had an African slave acting as his butler. Bukhari, Muhammad acquired a slave girl's as booty. Muhammad kept a slave as active as trader. Bukhari, Muslim. Bukhari,
hey, you know what?
Bukhari,
I got to ask.
Abu Dawood. What?
You just mentioned all these statements that talked about Muhammad having an African. Is that not a statement that Muhammad was white?
I say that again. What?
Muhammad was white. And people don't realize that's what I'm saying.
So I've seen
the
a lot of
says that.
Reference. Well, I've seen references for that. Yeah. Let's see here, Paul. Yeah. So if you look, I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. The number of references to Muhammad owning slaves, and whether black slaves or otherwise, they're still human beings enslaved.
Amen.
By Muhammad. It's not only in the hadith literature, it's over here in the Sirah, in the biography. A slave girl was given a violent beating by Ali in the presence of Muhammad, who doesn't do anything, and Abu Dawood. So you have all of these instances of slavery occurring, Muhammad's enslaving people. And in the process of enslaving people, he's selling slaves, he's raping slaves. Because anytime you talk about merit or you talk about a slave owner having sex with the slave, you're talking about rape. In any other circumstance, you would say that that slave owner is raping that individual. Especially when it comes to the American slave experience, you would say that those slave owners in the South raped their slaves, and they did, because they're doing this without the consent of the slaves. You're exercising power over somebody, and in the process, it's classified as rape. So when we think about what happened with Muhammad committed rape. So how can he be the best example of all mankind if he's a rapist? Because somebody who commits rape, what do you call them?
Well, in Muhammad's case, we start with pedophile, and then we get, and then he not only likes little children, he likes older women too.
Yeah. If you bring this, if you say this, then you're the bigot. That's the craziest thing. You're the hater for bringing this up. You're the hater for pointing this out.
But it's in the surahs. It's in the hadiths. I mean, we're just talking about what they wrote. Just because we tell the truth. I'm sorry. Truth is more important.
Okay, you know, so there's another thing is, you know, you got to look at what their definition is, how they define it, you know, because what I've noticed about even the Democrats, you know, what they do is in order to justify themselves, they redefine words and terms and stuff like that. And Muslims have been doing that for 1400 years.
Yes.
So you got to look at how they define it. You know, another order to understand like war or tactics and strategy, you got to get in their minds. Well, and you can go and barf up.
That's someplace I don't want to go.
Huh?
Sharon, this is exactly taught in communist literature and about how to do create subversive activities. Yes. Very well. Yeah. Very
what
incredibly
is Karen? Active. What are you saying here, Karen? Karen is saying that the section in Reliance of the Traveler has not been on slavery has not been translated. What are you talking about there? To put that in the chat, if you would. I don't see that because I'm looking at.
I would be willing to bet she's partially correct because when I've talked to Osama about portions of Reliance of the Traveler, he will make notice of entire areas that are not translated.
Yeah, there was one that I think we went over when he was on the show. About it wasn't translated because it was just so sick. It was something, it was something sexual, but I mean, it was just sick. But when you go to Reliance of the Traveler,
I was having sex with a goat or something. You know, sex with a goat.
I don't know if it was a goat or not, but I know it was sexual and it was sick. It was a perverted act, whatever it was. And they didn't translate it into the English. They just left it in the Arabic.
Anyway, what they consider the most accurate, but when by omission and things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so if we go to Reliance of the Traveler, which is the jurisprudence manual for the Sharia, page 604, division O, chapter 9, number 13, it says right here, when a child or a woman is taken captive, they become slaves by the fact of capture, and the woman's previous marriage is immediately annulled. This is Islamic law. This is the Sharia. So if you are captured, chapter on slavery is in my copy, isn't translated. If you were captured on the battlefield, as I mentioned before, you are therefore that man's slave. And that marriage, even if your husband is still alive, because it says it, let's see here, and woman's previous marriage is immediately annulled. Your marriage is annulled. You're no longer considered a married person simply because you've been captured, and this person is going to do whatever the heck he wants to you and with you. That is sick. Same page, very next paragraph. Division O, chapter 9, number 14. When an adult male is taken captive, the caliph considers the interests of Islam and Muslims and decides between the prisoner's death, slavery, release without paying anything, or ransoming himself in exchange for money or for a Muslim captive held by the enemy. So here you have, if a man, now a woman is just considered the man's property. A woman has no choice. It just sucks being you because you're a woman and they're going to do what they want to. But a man, on the other hand, a man can kill the man. I guess that's better than getting raped, but well, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, you can kill the man. However, you can make him your slave. You can release him, do it, you know, just say, hey, it's all right. Go ahead, go away. Figure the odds of that happening. Or you can trade him for another Muslim slave. So this is right here in Reliance of the Traveler, page 604. I'm going to put it right up here in front of the camera so everybody can see.
It says, when a child or a woman is taken captive, they become the slaves by the fact of capture, and the woman's previous marriage is immediately annulled. Number 14, when an adult male is taken captive, the caliph considers the interest of the Islam and decides between the prisoner's death, slavery, release with paying, or anything, or ransoming himself in exchange for money or for Muslim held captive by the enemy. And then it's permissible. Oh, it is permissible in jihad to cut down enemies' trees and destroy their dwellings too. On the next page, you turn to page, go to page 606, division O, chapter 10, number 2, as for personal booty, anyone who, despite resistance, kills one of the enemy or effectively incapacitates him, risking his own life thereby, is entitled to whatever he can take from the enemy, meaning as much as he can take away with him in battle, such as a mount, clothes, weaponry, money, or other. So the other would be what? Human beings. So it says right here in their own Sharia. Let's put that over here. In their own Sharia, you can have slaves. So let's just summarize here. Allah says you can have slaves. That's in the Quran. We've cited several verses where Allah says it's okay for you to take slaves. Muhammad took slaves. He enslaved people. He owned slaves, he bought slaves, and he sold slaves, and he had sex with slave women, raped slave women. So that is Sunnah, making it okay. And then, or making it permissible. If Muhammad did it is permissible.
You forgot the Quran also says that permissible to you are your wives and those that your right hand possesses. So Allah makes it permissible for you to have sex with your slave girls.
Right. I think, didn't I lead up? Didn't I say that the Quran says that you could do that? Okay.
I just missed it.
Hamhead was a G. What is this? Muhammad was. Okay. There we go. I'm trying to think what Ed Van Halen is saying here. Okay. That makes Bastage. You ever see that movie, Johnny Dangerously, with Michael Keaton?
Oh, that's an age ago.
Oh, my gosh. You sorry bastages. he would butcher the language in two different languages. I know. But then they deported him to the wrong country. He got deported, but they sent him to the wrong country. He says, I'm not from Romania. I'm from Cuba or wherever the heck it was. Okay. Yes. So summarize. In summary. Okay. So the Quran says it. The Allah says that in all of eternity, on those tablets written for all eternity in heaven, says it's okay to own slaves. Muhammad did it. So it's therefore Sunnah. So therefore it is permissible. And the Islamic law, even the commentary, the Tafsir from Al-Jalalain says that, explains that. And then the Sharia, right there in Reliance of the Traveler, says that slavery is permissible. So the bottom line is that slavery of any kind, whether that is African slavery, when we went over the African slave trade, and I think that we did it, I did a fair job of showing how it was exponentially more pervasive in its size and its scope and its length than the transatlantic slave trade, even though I'm not trying to marginalize or minimize the horrors of the transatlantic slave trade, because when you start talking about 11 million human beings, you're talking about creatures created in the image of God. Now, Karen says on page 376, okay, 376 of the Lines of the Traveler, 376, K1, I don't know, the more reliable two positions reported for Imam. For the Prophet forbade various sales, but did not explain the permissible ones. He is not doing so, proving that the initial presumption for the validity of sale is that it is lawful. This was also born out of hadith, such as the one in which the prophet gave him was the type asking the best answered the work of a man's hand and every pious. All right, well, peace you. We'll see you. My son's waving. Let's see here. I don't see where that applies. 395 K58. K58. Okay. Let's jump over there. Sorry, I'm not seeing it. You're going to probably have to explain it to me like I'm a two-year-old. You're right. K58 is not translated. Very good. Good catch. There we go. Okay, here it is. K58. Oops. Here we go. K58. If you notice, that's not translated. Now, what that deals with, I don't know. But it talks about...
That's on the goat.
Is that about the goat?
I don't think
it's the goat, but...
There's one of them is shocking. Let's test it down. Did you say you
had... Okay, what do you got here, Red?
Are we finishing up? Because I had something I want to read. I want to check it.
No, that's fine. From, that's fine. I'm done with... I think I'm done. Hold on, let me check my PowerPoint. I think I'm done with... I had one more slide, but that... Let me just do this real quick. Let me just show this real quick, because I want to just show the...
Sure,
depraved this thought process is. Let me just show this to you here. Okay, so it has been narrated on the authority of Salama, who said, "I saw," and I cut this down because it was just so long. But here you have a little girl being captured, and it says, and I've read this one before on the show, and she was one of the prettiest girls in Arabia. I drove them along until I brought them to Abu Bakr, who bestowed that girl upon me as a prize. So we arrived in Medina. I had not yet disrobed her. Now think about this. This guy is getting a girl, and he has not yet disrobed this girl. Now, what does that mean? He has not taken her clothes off and raped this poor child. Let's see. So we arrived, and when the messenger of Allah, now Muhammad hears about this, and when the messenger of Allah met me in the street and said, "Give me that girl." Notice he didn't say woman. "Give me that girl, O Salama." I said, "Messenger of Allah, she has fascinated me. I had not yet disrobed her yet," meaning he has not raped her yet. When on the next day, Muhammad again, Messenger of Allah, again met me in the street and said, "Salama, give me that girl. May God bless your father." I said, "She is for you, Messenger of Allah." So, Here you have a little girl captured on the battlefield and being given to Muhammad. Muhammad going to this man and specifically asking this man for a girl. Now, the girl was captured when she was with her mom on the battlefield. This is not a grown woman. It says girl, meaning she was a child.
And we have now, to look whether at that's that. Prepubescent. Yeah, that Muhammad does define the difference between a woman and a girl by when he tells a man that he could have married a girl. Yeah, he was trying to get this guy not to be married to a woman near his age. He wanted him to marry a girl so he could play with her.
We've talked about that on the show before. Why didn't you marry a virgin as opposed to a matron or something like that? I can't remember exactly what it's worded.
Yes.
But there was a Muslim on the show that was arguing that. I can't remember who it was.
I think it was Yahya back then.
Was it Yahya? Now that you mentioned it, that sounds about right. It probably was Yahya. Who likes to be called not Yahya Snow. I guess that's not the same guy. Yahya Islam Defender or something like that.
Yeah, he just got trashed on another show that I was watching.
He just got what? He
got trashed recently on another show I was watching because he was lying so much.
Yeah. Okay, Rad, what do you got, brother? What is this nonsense here? What are you doing? Rad?
All right. Yeah, I'm here. So, this is taken from bloggingtheology.net.com.
We can't see it. It's pretty small.
Well, he's going to have to make it bigger because it's bigger on my he's going to make
it right, full screen. Hold on. I got this. Okay. I got this. Here we go.
But anyway, this is a, I can make it bigger in a little bit, but just to give you background, this was posted, I don't know, you guys probably don't know, Paul Williams. He's a gay Muslim revert who then re-reverted, who then re-reverted, and then re-reverted. He goes to Speaker's Corner a lot. Yeah. He was part of the first Muslim debate initiative called MDI. Those were ones that first that started debating Dr. Wood back in the day, et cetera. These are dudes from Pal Talk. Well, Paul Williams wasn't, but anyway, so he ran his blog called Blogging Theology, and then all of a sudden, Ijaz Ahmed, I'm sure you guys remember him, Paul Williams actually did a post saying, I'm giving up Blogging Theology because trolls like Radical Moderate keep coming and attacking me, okay? So I actually made him take down his blog. It was kind of funny. It was a moment of triumph for me. But so he gave it over to Ijaz, and Ijaz. And then there was this huge fight where Ijaz locked out Paul Williams, and it was this big fight. I mean, really, really wild. Because Paul was defending, Paul Williams was defending, what's her name, that woman in England. She's a news reporter. She got attacked in Speaker's Corner for defending Tommy Robinson. Well, he defended her, and Ijaz said, you can't be defending a kafir. Don't defend a kafir. And it was turned into a big fight. Well, anyway, before all this, and Ijaz doesn't even know this is up. If he knew this was up, he would take it down, okay? All right? I mean, seriously, he would take it down. I don't even know if Ijaz is still around, but if he knew it was up, he would take it down because this is so inflammatory. This is written by Dr. Jonathan A.C. Brown, Oxford scholar of Islam, a revert himself, but a Salafi, someone who's very hardcore, someone that our imam from Texas likes to quote and then misquote and say that he actually defends his position. It's kind of funny. But here's what he writes on, this is an article he wrote on slavery and sex with slaves, or rape actually in general. He further first sets out that rape in Islamic law, there's no definition of rape in Islamic law, okay? That's something interesting because the Muslims say there is no rape in Islamic law. Yeah, there really is no such thing as rape in Islamic law. It's coerced illegal sex, okay? Where they make a distinction that if a woman is coerced into having sex, the Hajj laws are not to be submitted to her, but she has to prove it. So we won't discuss that. But here's the part I want to read, okay, regarding slave women. The jurist, can you guys see it? Let me make it bigger for you. Okay. The jurist drew a general status distinction between free persons and slaves. And this distinction reflects in areas of law, including rape law. There are several notable differences between the jurisdiction discussion of sexual violation between a free person and sexual violation involving slaves, all of them stemming from the legal status of slaves as property rather than proprietors. The first is a difference in terminology and placement in legal words. Violation of free women is normally described as coercive zina, and victims as the coerced woman. And substantive discussions are normally found in chapters of the Hudud and Zina violations of slave women. On the other hand, normally is described as property usurpation, gasp, and the victim as usurped property, magabash. And substantive discussions are normally found in chapters of Gasab, whatever. The second notable difference is the point of attention to the violation state of free women, acts of zina, and the frequent lack of attention to the violation state of slave women in the acts of gasp. For the jurist, sexual usurpation of a slave woman was a form of, let me highlight that for you, property damage, okay, that required financial compensation to her owner for depreciation. The consent or coercion of the slave woman to act, while important to determine whether or not she should get the had punishment, okay, was irrelevant to assessing depreciation. A third key difference between the violation of free woman and slave woman is closely related to the previous point. The jurists were in agreement that violation of a slave woman required compensation to owners, usually equal to the amount by which she was depreciated by the act. this being a particular reference, as she was previously a virgin. Such agreement on monetary compensation was not found in the case of free female rape victims, and this latter point remained heavily contested between the schools of law as follows. According to Malachi, Hanbali, and Shafi schools of law, the rape of a free woman consists of not one, but two violations, a vile against her right of God, provoking the high punishment, as we've seen above, and also a vile against a human interpersonal right, okay, provoking monetary compensation. These jurors saw the free woman and her proprietorship over her own sexual bud. It's not unlike the slave, it's not unlike the slave owner who owns the sexuality of his female slave. For them, in the same way that the slave owner was entitled to compensation for sexual misappropriation, the free woman also was entitled to compensation. The amount of this compensation, they reasoned, should be the amount that any man would normally pay for sexual access to the woman in question. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
They reasoned should be the amount that any man would normally pay for sexual access to the woman in question. That is the amount of her dower. Islamic jurisprudence thinking thus relied not only on the logic of the idea with rape, but also on the logic of marriage. In the case of a slave woman, rape was specifically analyzed through usurpation of sexual property. And in that, and in the case of the free woman, it was analogized to certain conjugal rights. In any case, the dower compensation was only seen as applicable to intercourse that had taken place, assault of a free woman that excluded vaginal practice, such as manual declaration, did not. Okay, well, it gets into some pretty weird, you know, detailed stuff. But the bottom line is this, people: when it comes to slave women, that's pimping, dude. That is totally pimping. The slave owner can pimp out his slaves and charge them a fee based on deflowerization, based on depreciation of the slave woman.
That it sounds pimping. Like a bookkeeping thing.
It is.
Where it's depreciation totally of equipment and businesses. And
you've
reduced it to the human condition. You know, you've depreciated the human condition. How much have you done?
Well, you can rob a brothel of slave women and just charge the customers, okay, for the depreciation of your sexual property. Set them on a fixed fee. No,
it's just that's sick, one for people. Sick and sad. Yeah, this is where we start talking about, you know, how the treatment of I think Karen brought this up last week also, was just the treatment of women in Islam and in Islamic countries just absolutely horrendous. You know, the view of women is so low that if you're going to view a woman as being nothing but a piece of a woman slave, and you notice how the law treated men slaves differently, or men captured on the battlefield differently. You have four options there. You could kill them, you could free them, you could ransom them, or you could enslave them, where a woman, you just enslave. You're not ransom, you know, and I think the key idea there is ransoming. Well, who would want to pay ransom for a woman? You know, that's the view and the value of women in that culture.
She's more valuable as a prostitute.
I don't know. And it's just your sensibilities are so insulted by this and by people like that who make those comments. And then when you make applications for that within the Sharia itself, and then you point it out in the Sharia, you know, we're automatically the bad guys for pointing out what their own law says, or we simply don't understand, you know, what we're reading here. It's a reading comprehension issue or something along those lines. You just get so tired of dealing with it. It's just, I don't know. We had those, for a couple of weeks in a row, we were just going over this Age of Aisha thing. And it's just every time you bring it up, it just makes your skin crawl. And it should. But the more you talk about it, the more it just, it bothers you. And it should. And it just gets to the point where you just develop this visceral disdain for anyone who would think that Muhammad would be an example for all time, for all of mankind, knowing
that that's part of his sunnah. That is his example. And that men, thousands, hundreds of thousands of men for centuries have done that to little girls. And it just makes you sick thinking about that. And then when they put it into, when you put it actually into the legalese and make an application and treat them as nothing more than a depreciation of property, of what you would do with a standard piece of machinery. If you owned a factory or something like that, you have a depreciation schedule where it eventually just wears out and you have to replace it. That's what you're relegating that woman to, that human being, that individual created in the image of God. That's what you're relegating him to. And if that doesn't make you angry, I really don't know what does. Okay, that's all I have for the day, guys. Do you guys have anything that you want to add to today's show? Anything you want to bring up?
I covered it for me.
I think the most important thing is people have to understand that Islam has no problem, and I'll use the words of Harry L. Johnson here, the human cattle market. I like those, that terminology. They have no problem. It's in the Sharia. It's in the Hadith. It's in the Quran. It's okay today. If you are a part of Islam, run away because you don't want this. I would say open a Bible. Start in the book of Matthew. You will discover that Jesus is God and he has done something incredible for you. Leave Islam and take a look at the gospel because it was written for you as it was for us.
Exactly. Just for that person. Yeah. When we look at the, Islam isn't, you know, we can sit here and point a finger and say, Islam, you guys practice slavery. You're evil. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not doing that to just say, well, Islam is evil because it codifies slavery. I'm saying slavery is evil.
Yes.
Period. Slavery has been practiced by humankind in every culture. And even, you know, we think, a lot of people think, oh, these Native Americans were, you know, we came over, you know, you terrible Europeans came over here.
They had slaves.
They traded slaves like they were cattle too.
Long before my relatives came here.
Right. Little Sacagawea from the Lewis and Clark Act. She was a slave girl. She was bought by, what was that guy? Charbonneau was the guy's name. She was bought by a French trader, fur trapper. I mean, they've practiced slavery in every culture. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Even though slavery has been in every culture for centuries, it has been abolished today. And it's because we today in the 21st century know that it's evil.
Any well, human being, for Islamic countries, it's still not really.
Well, that's the point I'm trying to get. I'm circling back to.
Yeah.
But since it's codified in the Sharia, you can do this according to the Sharia. You can do this because Muhammad did it. You could do this because Allah said it's okay in the Quran. So therefore, it's still permissible. That's the difference. That's the difference between the United States, because the United States Constitution, when we think of the United States Constitution, when the Constitution was ratified, slavery was not abolished. However, the importation of slaves, the transatlantic slave trade, importing slaves into the Americas was, and it was not abolished immediately. It was abolished, it says in the Constitution, 20 years from the ratification of this Constitution, it will be abolished. So it was eventually abolished in 1808. So you couldn't import, because they recognized that it's just wrong to tear somebody out of their home life, transport them across the ocean, and then enslave. Jefferson even wrote it in his initial draft in the Declaration of Independence. The king has forced us to participate in this abhorrent practice of tearing people out of their condition and enslaving them, carrying them across the ocean. He even put it in the Declaration of Independence. It was taken out, but it was there. So our country, yes, the United States is guilty of slavery. Upwards of 300,000, maybe 350,000 people were brought from Africa to the British colonies, and then that slave practice was continued all the way up until 1865 with the passage of the 13th Amendment. It was finally, the practice was finally abolished. It's wrong. And somebody needs to change the Sharia. Somebody needs to step in and say, okay, even though Muhammad did this, this is the 21st century, no human being should have the right ever to own another human being under any circumstance, especially to abuse that human being for their own personal sexual gratification and pleasure at the expense of the psychological damage done to the person being abused and or the physical damage that would be done that we learned about here recently when Lloyd was on. Okay, folks, that's all I got. Rad, Darcy, Sharon, Issa, did you guys have anything else that you wanted to contribute today?
Thank you. Appreciate it. I have a question.
Okay.
Or actually, I have two things.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say it's more like a question slash statement. Is like, have you ever noticed that the reformers, or even the ones, the Muslims that enter those interfaith dialogues, they never bring up Sharia? And if you do, I mean, I've been called names like you wouldn't believe by other Christians in those things, but they never. It's like they deflect off of the Sharia or the Quran. It gets bad.
Well, this is what Lloyd said. Lloyd said that it is actually illegal, according to the Sharia, to discuss the Sharia with non-Muslims.
That's
the Sharia. So that they're naturally going to deflect. Because they cannot discuss, by Islamic law, they're not allowed to discuss the Sharia.
Actually, you know what? That's a good point for me to bring up to the next one I attend. But, you know, my brain got stuck on K5.8. Does Lloyd know Arabic?
Say that again?
Does Lloyd DeYoung know Arabic?
I don't believe he does, but Osama does. We can get Osama to translate.
I was wondering if he could
translate. I can have him translate that for you.
Okay, because, man, my brain is stuck on that, and I've been doing it.
We'll see each other Tuesday, and I will ask if he can do that for me.
Okay. Thank you.
Why is he in town?
I'm pretty sure it has something to do with sex.
I talk with him every week. I talk with him a couple times a week, so I can do that.
Right. What'd you say, Rad? I'm sorry. We were talking over you.
I'm pretty sure it has something to do with sex with goats or animals. No, I'm serious. I'm not letting you know. You know who does know? Connie actually does know. She's the one who pointed it out to me. She's at the translation. Seriously.
Well, where is Connie today? She take the day off?
Yes.
We're going to have to dock her pay or something. What happened to her, Darcy?
She's just with family today.
That's always her excuse.
Love it.
Right. Yeah. All right, folks, thank you so much for coming, spending your Sunday afternoon here. We will be back here on Tuesday, where we're going to continue to look at that black hole in the middle of the Saudi Arabian desert that we call Mecca, and why we can clearly demonstrate that it did not exist in the 7th century. This is a fabrication, an invention of Islamic literature developed over centuries. That's all I got. God bless you guys. We will see you Tuesday.
There is something. Yes. That Islam, Matira Obradad, she was asking if she could use your videos and just put her Spanish subtitles on them.
Who did?
It's Islam Matira Obradad in the YouTube chat.
Oh, I see it now. Yeah, okay. Islam. Is that what that... Okay, it is Verdad. That is Spanish. I should have recognized that. I can read Spanish. I don't understand a word of it. I do. I'm kidding. I do understand quite a bit of Spanish. Absolutely. Anytime that you want to use my material is not copyrighted. I do not have a problem with people clipping it and abusing us here and critiquing us and saying, look at these kafirs. They don't know what they're, I have no problem. I'm not one of these, what do you call them? Sycophants that our material is copyrighted and you need the express written permission. Shut your pie hole. It's YouTube, for crying out loud. But yeah, absolutely. And I would appreciate it if you did that. Thank you so much for doing that. What is it, prego? Why do you say you're welcome in Spanish? Not prego. That's kind of an Italian term. Sudo usar sus videos.
Gracias.
Gracias. Thank you, Pera. Carlos Carreles. Subtitles es Espanol. Yes, absolutely. Can you use your videos? I know Spanish. Some Portuguese. Wow. Parla italiano.
Wow, crossing.
Tutto bene.
Translated in multi-language.
Yes,
we're going international. Don't forget to play the clothes. Don't forget to play.
Oh my gosh, Brad! Thank you for reminding me. All right, God bless y'all, and we will see you next time on the Crossing the Crescent discussion group.
Advanced student and specialist, that the standard narrative has holes. That's what I'm.
That's all, folks.